Chex. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Most of those who commit crimes end up behind bars. They serve their time and get out of jail. But the time it takes to repay debts to society tends to last well beyond the original sentence. It isn't easy to rebuild a life after being in jail, and that is especially true for women who are sometimes trying to hold their families together and care for children at the same time. Our community spends $27,000 a year to keep just one person in prison, so it makes sense to try to help released prisoners get back on their feet and stay out of jail. There are several organizations working to make that happen while also focusing on women, and we're going to hear about two of them this hour. Melissa Mummert is the Client Initiatives Manager for Changed Choices, which was started when one woman, Ruth Snyder, now the organization's executive director, started visiting women in the Mecklenburg County Jail and discovered the need. The success of Changed Choices is reflected in the very low recidivism rate of their clients, which we'll talk about. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Nice to have you here. Melissa also conceived of an organization called Second Helping soon after she joined the staff of Changed Choices. They provide employment to the unemployed and underemployed clients of Changed Choices, and one of the people they've helped is also with us, Monique Maddox, a former inmate who spent two periods in prison, but who is now the catering manager of Second Helping, and she actually helped Melissa found that organization. Welcome to you.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Nice to meet you. And Mecklenburg County Sheriff Chip Bailey is here. He has spoken many times about the cost of incarceration and the need for intervention and rehabilitation, and he joins us again this hour. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
Oh, let me turn your mic on. Good morning.
Good morning.
That's much better. Now then, let's start with you. How big a problem is women in jail or prison in Mecklenburg County in North Carolina?
Well, we've seen a growth not only in North Carolina and Mecklenburg County, but nationally in the number of women who are being incarcerated. Right now, we have around 200 women in our facilities, three of which right now are 16, 17-year-old youthful offenders. So it's important for us to recognize the needs that they have, and especially when they're coming out. Everybody in my custody will not be there more than 120 days if they've been sentenced to our custody. Some who are awaiting trial may go longer than that, but the in-custody people are misdemeanants and will not be there more than 120 days. So they're going to be coming back into the community. And what we're committed to doing is trying to change lives, change lifestyles. If there's cycles of addiction that need to be broken, we do that. We give GED programs, and in the case of youthful offenders, we operate the only high school inside of a jail in the state of North Carolina.
The ACLU says in the last 35 years, the number of women and girls caught in the criminal justice system has skyrocketed. And you just said that you've seen a marked increase in the number of women in your system. Why? What's going on?
Many of them come from abusive relationships, domestic violence situations. We're seeing an uptick in human trafficking cases where women have been arrested for, and then as we start interviewing them and learning more about why they've been arrested, and they start using terms like they were servants for somebody or something like that, which are trigger words for human trafficking, we're starting to see more of that. And a lot of times they get arrested, and if you've got to really pay attention to those trigger words and those cues that they give you when you're interviewing them at the arrest processing piece to recognize their circumstances. But abusive relationships, I think, are probably the highest result in the highest number being arrested.
How much of the increase in women in jail and women in prison has to do with the war on drugs and also increasingly punitive sentencing for nonviolent offenders?
Most of the women we have are nonviolent. We have some that are in our jail waiting trial for murder, those kind of things, but they're more the exception than the rule. Drugs, 80% of our overall population is either in for some mental issues or substance abuse issues or duly diagnosed issues with regard to drugs and mental issues. So drugs has a
These sound like medical and not criminal problems.
The mental certainly are medical. And
I would say the addiction problems are medical as well.
Well, they are. And we've had real good success with breaking the cycles of addiction through counseling and those kind of things. And we have great partnerships outside of the jail system where we refer folks when they're getting out. Our work release, we bring the families in and that type thing. And we have females in the work release program also. And some of the things we try to do is to, you know, have programs like culinary training, things to build job skills.
So are the reasons that women are in jail substantially different than their male counterparts? Are the males more violent? Are they involved in more heinous crimes, so to speak? I mean, is there a big difference?
I think in a lot more cases you find the women more victims of certain situations than you do the males, but you a lot of times it's the same things, and sometimes it's they're women who have been arrested have committed larcenies or robberies because of their relationship with the male who expects them to do those kind of things. And we've even had some that it's a whole family type situation where children have grown up in the environment of shoplifting and larceny and drugs all in the house.
That's what they know.
And that's what they know. And so the only way that we can make a difference in their lives is to I call it building character instead of jails. We're wanting to change their lifestyle habits and in the same sense educate, train for vocational type things, but get those cycles of addiction and treat mental illness.
How difficult is that to do? It seems to me that if you grow up in an environment where the norm is all the things you talked about, shoplifting, larceny, other things like that, where you really don't know any difference and you
right.
don't see that as being wrong because
right.
mom and dad are doing it, your uncles and aunts are doing it, everybody in the neighborhood is doing
right.
it, how do you break that? How do you convince people that that is wrong and here's the right way?
Well, through some very good staff members, for one thing, who have good training and know how to counsel. But let me give you a good example. If we have a young female or male who comes in 16, 17 years old, and we put them in our high school environment, the first 2-3 days, you can see a total resistance.
Mm-hmm.
They'll stare at the wall. They don't want any part of it.
Sure.
But give them about 2 or 3 days, and they start to realize around them what the others are doing and how they're enjoying what they're doing and how they're absorbing some of this learning material that they get, and then they start to engage. And once they engage, whether it's in the high school environment, whether it's in the breaking the cycles of addiction environment or GEDs or whatever it is, once they engage, then you see a metamorphosis of such that they are changing. Now, the important piece is when they get released, because if they don't have the aftercare, I call it aftercare, but the support systems that programs like Melissa has or others have out in the community, and they go back to that same environment, then it's going to be a backslide. And we learned that from a 17-year-old.
And sometimes they don't have a choice but to backslide because they can't get a job.
Well, they can't. And and all of us are working in that arena to right. try to really make a difference in those lives.
Let me move to Monique here.
Okay.
This is not your story. You graduated from high school and from college and made a life for yourself in Atlanta before you moved back here to North Carolina, where you came from, where you grew up. That all happened before you got into trouble. and you got tangled up, I'm told, with a fugitive drug dealer. And according to the information we were given, you got, and I quote here, sucked up into this life. What life was that?
It was a drug life.
Meaning?
Selling drugs. I just got caught up with a guy that basically in the beginning I really didn't know that he was a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm. So it was like a boyfriend kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it was a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. It was a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a facade. You know, he owned two businesses
mm-hmm.
at the same time. So I think I was too deep in the relationship after I figured out that there's some other stuff going on besides.
So once you found out, as you say, you were too deep, meaning you weren't going to walk away from it or you couldn't walk away from it? or you didn't want to walk away from it?
I couldn't walk away from it.
Okay, all right. And you, I'm told you carried on your boyfriend's, for lack of a better term, your boyfriend's drug dealing business for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Were you actively out there selling drugs?
Selling drugs, running drugs, trafficking drugs.
And you knew this was wrong. He went to college. I mean, you knew this was wrong, right?
I did.
What kept you going? I mean, people don't understand that you couldn't walk away. What does that mean, you couldn't walk away from that?
I think for me, at that time in my life, I was at a low point.
Mm-hmm.
I think I didn't know who I was. I just had a moral breakdown. You know, I knew right from wrong, but I just wasn't making the right choices.
Were you doing drugs yourself?
In the beginning, no.
Okay. So you knew that what you were doing was wrong. You knew that if you got caught, you'd be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever conceive of having to go to jail for this?
I never thought that.
Never thought, never occurred to you? Really?
No.
How did you get caught?
I got caught after I got out of it. After I stopped, I just said I wasn't going to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. I was pregnant with my second child. I was working, and I had another friend call me and ask me, since that's what I did, I knew how to run drugs through the state, and they asked me would I do a run for them.
So you had stopped,
mm-hmm.
and because of your impending child, you had stopped, and then you did a favor for somebody, and that's what got you caught.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get caught?
On the highway.
And what went through your mind?
I was scared. I didn't know what was about to happen. But actually, when we got, when they took us downtown, they let us go home.
What were you running? What did they catch you with?
Cocaine and marijuana.
How much?
It was a lot. It was some trash bags full.
Trash bags.
Bags full. Mm-hmm.
They sentenced you, I'm told, to 19 and a half years.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smokes. You had a two-month-old baby boy and an 11-year-old son that you had to leave behind. You only served two of those 19 years.
Eight.
Eight?
I served 8.5 years.
Wow. So your son was how old when you got out, the 11-year-old? He was 21, 22?
He was 20.
Okay.
And he was 2 months old when I went in. He was 8 when I came home.
And who raised them?
My oldest son was raised by his father, and my youngest son was raised by an aunt.
And the father of the oldest son was not the guy who was the drug fellow. It was in jail that you say you got straight. These are your words. Got straight with yourself. What does that mean?
When I finally got arrested, I was, because like I said, I didn't get arrested the day that we got pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
I actually got a call from a federal agent saying that I would have to turn myself in. So I did that, and a week later I was able to get a bond. And by then I was into an addiction. I was using cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was heavy into that addiction, and I wasn't ready to go to jail or prison because my attorney was saying that, you know, you're possibly looking at a life sentence. And so I went on a run, and when I finally did get caught from being on the run, and I got into that jail, and I just sit in that cell, and I said, thank you.
Wow. Let's stop there. We'll come back and pick it up at that point in time and learn more about some of the programs that are available for women like this in the jails and the prisons. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Parsec Financial, wealth management for individuals, businesses, and trust services. Details at parsecfinancial.com or by phone at 704-334-0894. And Southeast Anesthesiology Consultants, partnering with healthcare professionals and physicians in Charlotte and the surrounding area for over 30 years, dedicated to assuring safety and administering comfort, seanesthesiology.com. While lots of arts organizations struggle to find an audience and to find funding, particularly in classical music, opera seems to be going in the opposite direction, finding new audiences. And Opera Carolina locally is a good example of that. They partner with other opera companies to defray costs, and Verdi's Aida, their first production of the season, is a good example of that. We'll hear all about that tomorrow morning, first on the program, and then a facility in the mountains originally designed to help NASA, but which eventually served our intelligence interests. That's all at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Obama administration scrambles to fix problems with healthcare.gov, what's at stake politically, and prospects for getting the new health insurance exchanges fully operating by the enrollment deadlines.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about women in jail and prison and the programs available for them to help them while they're there and when they get out. Melissa Mumbert, who has not uttered a word except thank you for having me, I'll be talking to you shortly because you're the person in charge of the client initiatives for Changed Choices and the co-founder of Second Helping, both organizations helping women. Monique Maddox is one of the co-founders of Changed Choices, where she is also the catering manager, a former inmate, and Chip Bailey, sheriff of Mecklenburg County. You just said, Monique, that when you finally got into jail and you weren't ready to go, but when you got there, you just said, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that stopped the cycle, that stopped, that took you out of the environment that had been so seductive that you couldn't get out of?
True.
You were described, and we'll talk more about this in a second, but you were described as in jail as being very angry for a long time. Angry at whom or what?
I think I was angry at myself.
Huh.
At the choices I made. I sit and wrote a lot when I was in prison. And just to go back to you, when you said you made those decisions and you knew they were wrong. And I had to accept the reality of that. I did know they were wrong, and those were decisions that I made. And I think I was angry at myself.
People do this every day, though. Maybe not in the legal system, but we do things probably every day that we know are wrong.
Right.
Just that when you tangle with the legal system, that's a little more severe, it seems to be. She had two children when she went to jail, and she was in there for how long? 9 years?
8 years.
8 years. Eight. And she had an infant son, and she had an 8-year-old boy when she went into jail. I think that many women in jail have a similar situation. Is that taken into consideration at sentencing or while they're in jail or prison? Do prison officials take that into consideration?
It's not really taken into consideration that much, I don't think, in the sentencing phase.
Mm-hmm.
In the jail situation, we're aware of it, but it's still problematic in dealing with it, where, you know, if a child's brought to visit, there's still a pane of glass between them and the parent.
Those things we see on those big community rooms that we see on television where people sit opposite each other at tables and across from each other in chairs is not the reality?
That's more of a prison setting. And prison, because people are in for such a long term in prison, there's more opportunity for that closer contact.
Uh-huh.
As I said earlier, in the jail system, it's primarily 120 days if they're sentenced to our custody. And only misdemeanors now. When she came through initially, we were housing felons, but a state law changed that a year ago, and we can't hold felons in the local jails anymore. They have to go to the prison system.
Okay. Now, you were there in the local jail system for, what, 2 years before you went to prison?
Yes.
How many times did you get to see your children?
In Charlotte, I saw my kids 3 times, and it was because of a program that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, what was the name of the program?
There was a parenting class that they used to have contact visits in the jail.
Mm-hmm. So I was able to take that class 3 different times, just being there those 2 years, and it allowed me to get a contact visit.
Yeah.
I didn't want the actual visit with the pain, because I did it one time, and it was devastating.
To you or to the children?
I think both.
Because they couldn't touch you, they couldn't really, they didn't understand.
And it was more, they were scared.
Uh-huh. But What's it like to be a mom on the other side of the glass or in a community setting, in a prison, visiting with her children? I mean, what is that like?
Well,
here's mama who cannot be mama full time, visiting with her kids in an odd setting, and at some point they take you away and they take the children back to home. I mean, what's that like?
Well, unfortunately, when I was in prison, I didn't receive visits. But at the jail, after those contact visits, they were hard.
Yeah.
But it gave, to me, I felt they were way different from the pain visit. I just think it gave a little strength to both me as well as the kids.
I don't know that you can answer this question, but you were in prison for 8 years with other women.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you had a lot of time to talk. How were they reacting to the similar situations?
What I would see women come back, you'll see the joy, but then you'll also see the hurt, and you would hear the hurt.
Yeah.
Women cried. They'll cry, mostly after if they got a visit from their children that week. It was a quiet that Sunday or that Saturday. That week for them was a quiet week for them.
Mm. It was changed choices that came into the picture for you, as I understand this, Monique. And you say they turned you around. What do you do for people, Melissa, that turns them around?
Well, changed choices provides holistic services for women who are incarcerated and who are coming home for the community. So there are, Monique is unique, but there are so many women who are right down the street from us at the county jail right now who are at their low point. They are sitting in their cells, they're crying, they're thinking, my life is over, what have I done? And it's that point that Change Choices comes in. We do classes. So I do classes 10 hours a week at the county jail.
What do you teach?
As we were talking about, you know, responsible thinking, social values, self-control, all the things that really cognitive behavioral therapy, mm-hmm. that they have a series of interactive journals where they have to sit and write about the choices that they've made.
Are most of the women who you teach these techniques to, these subjects to, for lack of a better term, is this a build-up? Is what got them in, the need for these classes, is it cumulative over time for the most of them, or did they make one big colossal mistake out of the clear blue sky and that's what got them there?
It's a both and. We have, you know, got an 18-year-old in there right now who's been, you know, living the street life for years and truly doesn't know different. So, you know, when we bring some of these skills, it's really eureka. Really? Oh, I didn't know I was thinking like that. And, oh, it's okay. I can think differently.
If you've been raised in an environment where you don't know right from wrong, and wrong seems right because that's the norm, and suddenly you're pointed toward a different way, does it look to these people, does it take them a long time to latch on to that? Does it look naive to them? I mean, the goody two-shoes life after living on the street may seem silly.
What I see a lot is that the people that I work with don't feel accepted or wanted in the legitimate economy. And so there's this sort of illegitimate economy.
I mean, if you can make a lot of money selling drugs, why would you take a day job at McDonald's?
Well, and if you try, you know, we go in and we teach these classes and we teach them about, you know, how to get a legitimate job and mm-hmm. how to do your resume and how to do all these things. But if they hit the street and they go apply for these jobs and they check a box that says, yes, I'm a convicted felon, and doors are slammed in their faces, then they feel like, you know, why do I even try? I'm not wanted. I'm not accepted. So,
Monique.
Just to answer, to say something to the question that you asked, this is what I have to ask myself every day. You ask, why would somebody want to work at McDonald's when they can go out and make a lot of money selling drugs? I feel like every day I have that choice, but what I choose now is to go and make that hourly wage just because it keeps my freedom. I don't have to watch over my back. It just provides a safe net for me,
mm-hmm.
and I like it.
I mean, that's a great decision to come to, and I salute you for it. Sheriff Bailey, I mean, there's a kind of a double whammy here because you can make more money selling drugs than you can getting a job, and a lot of these young people do not have the background or the education to get a high-paying job yet, and maybe they, if they work at it, they could. But then they have this strike against them that's always on their record of being a felon. And as Melissa pointed out, doors are shut in their face because people won't hire you. You're not; they're not getting a big chance to come back and to prove themselves. It's tough.
That's true. And there's a lot of employers that won't even consider someone with a felony. And one of the things we had started years ago at the sheriff's office was the work release program, where we partnered with businesses in the community, and they would actually take a chance on these people, mm-hmm. partly because they knew we were drug testing them every day, and they were going through these classes, anger management classes, whatever. And what the response has been from most of these business partners has been that these are some of the best employees I've had because they realize the opportunity they've got. They know they're coming drug-free to the workplace, and they're being successful. But that's the piece that you've got to have, that partnership outside to do that, and it's not always successful.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because this was just an interesting little sidebar. You got out of prison, Monique, mm-hmm. and then you got involved in the food business, I believe, or some business where they brought you rolls with poppy seeds on them, and you ate them, mm-hmm. and then you went for a drug test. Well, poppy seeds are opiates.
Right.
We all eat them.
Very much so.
but if you take a drug test after eating a poppy seed roll, you will test positive for opiates. They put you back in jail.
Yes, they sent me back to prison.
There's no way that you could have proven that it was just a poppy seed roll that you ate?
Well, I did prove it, but it took me 7 months to do that.
Let me address that a little bit. One of the things we emphasize in our counseling and everything else is freedom through responsibility. Yeah. And you've got to take the responsibility of knowing those things that you can't do or eat, and that includes poppy seeds. You've just got to be aware of it when you're subject to being drug tested like that. And as people learn...
I found out about poppy seeds about 3 years ago. I had no idea. Well, I would never... They would have put me away. So what are the other things you can't eat?
Well, I mean, you can't go out and sneak marijuana or brownies.
Right.
I mean, it's that education of changing that lifestyle of saying, okay, I've got to take responsibility for myself and my actions and know that there's consequences for each action I take. And then, unfortunately for her, in that consequence of eating that poppy seed roll was a negative drug test.
The really interesting thing here is that only 7% of your clients have been rearrested within 3 years. That's compared with 58% who do not get your help or choose not to take advantage of your help. How do you explain your effectiveness? Because you're very effective at this.
Change Choices is an incredibly effective agency, and we've got great news to share. And it's because, I mean, it's really not rocket science. Women, men as well, but I think women especially thrive or fall based on relationships. And what Change Choices does is we provide a new web of relationships for each woman we come into contact with. And so, you know, if you're asking somebody like Monique to give up a whole lifestyle, which is a whole web of relationships, then we're going to surround her and others like her with mentors, with counselors, with somebody that they can call on those lonely nights when they are tempted to make a bad choice.
AA in that you have a sponsor. Somebody's always there to support you if
absolutely.
You need their support.
Right. And also, you know, when they're in prison, just sending them books, sending them a little bit of money if they don't have any money, bringing their kids to visit if their children need to visit. So basically just creating a whole series of wraparound service. But the one thing that has been a stumbling block for so many of our clients, like we would provide the housing, we would provide the employment skills training, we would provide the counseling, the mentoring, but our clients weren't getting jobs or adequate jobs. So we decided to jump in and mm-hmm. launch through Change Choices Second Helping, program of Change Choices to really create the jobs, which is where Monique is working
when
now.
When you're dealing with somebody like Monique, who had a college education, who had a job and a life before the life that got her into trouble, and she kind of slipped into that unknowingly and then found herself wrapped up in this life, I would think a lot of the people that you deal with don't have a college education. Maybe not even have a high school education. Struggled through school, dropped out at an early age, found life on the streets as a way to live. How do you deal with them? How do you bring them in? How do you have results with the kind of results you've had with Monique here, who's now a catering manager? How do you do that for somebody like that who doesn't have her background?
With a lot of love, really. I mean, it really comes down to love. And, you know, we look for women who are highly motivated. That's the main criteria. So we've got some white-collar women who have master's degrees, and we have some, you know, 19-year-old women who have never known anything but a, quote, dysfunctional lifestyle. And yet, if we see that motivation and we see that they want it, and they have to do some rigorous applications to prove that they want it and sit with an applications committee who vets their application forwards and backwards. But if they get in, we're not letting them go.
Mm-hmm.
We have a beautiful young woman who, you know, got hired with Second Helping and she didn't work out.
When you say you have a vetting process, is that for Second Helping or is that for Change Choices or both?
Both. I mean, Change Choices is, you know, where we meet
right.
them. We meet them in the jail at that low point.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they apply to be clients of Change Choices, again, we work with them through jail, through prison, and they come back to the community. We still work with them. And then some of the women from Change Choices get hired to be workers at Second Helping.
What happens to the women who fall through the cracks, who don't make the application, who run the gauntlet and don't make it?
Right. We have some provisional clients who will say, well, I don't know. You know, this person has been in jail 25 times and she says she wants help. We're not sure. So we'll make them provisional clients and uh-huh. we might provide them some mentoring and counseling, but they might not have all of the services that we can provide because we just don't have the funding
so
to help
everybody.
So are
some people just not ready for you? Some people
yeah.
may never be ready for you.
Yeah.
Some people will never be able to make
right.
that transition.
There's a saying I use all the time. It takes what it takes. I don't know what it takes for some people's light bulbs to come on,
no.
But like Monique, hers came on, and it takes what it takes.
Did it come on because you had life, positive life experience prior to the negative life experience? In other words, you went to college, you had a life,
mm-hmm.
And you got into trouble, but you had that other life first, so you knew what that other life could be like. Did that help you come back to this side, so to speak? Or if you had never had that life, would it have been more difficult for you?
I can't speak on that because I never had that other life. I just had, you know, the life that I had, then I got exposed to that life.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm just glad to be out of that life.
I only have less than a minute left, Sheriff. How would you compare what these people do for women to what may be available for men?
There's a lot of similarities with things we have in the jails to do the same thing, and the work release is a good example, but it's all contingent on them really committing themselves to change their life.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody is not committed to making a difference and that taking that responsibility that's going to eventually give them that freedom, then we're not going to be successful.
Sheriff Chip Bailey with Mecklenburg County Jails. We're going to come back and talk more with Monique Maddox, who's a catering manager for an organization she helped found called Second Helping. We'll talk about what that is and how it works. And also Melissa Mummert, who's the client initiatives manager of Changed Choices and the co-founder of Second Helping. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Lenore Ryan University graduate programs offering master's degrees in a variety of disciplines from the Hickory, Asheville, and Columbia, South Carolina campuses. Details at lr.edu/graduate. And Atrium Animal Hospital and Wellness Center, providing holistic animal health care for 17 years. Open house Saturday, 3 to 6 p.m. Food, fun, education, and prizes. AtriumAnimalHospital.com. The Obama administration is scrambling to fix problems with the president's online health insurance marketplace. Diane Rehm and her guests talk about what's at stake politically and prospects for getting the new health insurance exchanges fully operating by a mid-December deadline. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, a great place to start would be WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. And we are coming right back.
There are 12 candidates running for the CMS board, and with so many, it can be difficult to learn about them all. Well, you can hear from them yourself this Thursday night in a school board candidate forum. WFAE education reporter Lisa Miller will be in charge as the moderator. We've partnered with the group MECED to sponsor the event. We hope you attend. It's at 6 p.m. Thursday in Tate Hall on CPCC's main campus.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about helping women in prison and jail and two of the programs that are available for them in this area. Melissa Mummert is the Client Initiatives Manager for Changed Choices and helped found Second Helping. Monique Maddox is a catering manager for that organization, and Chip Bailey is the sheriff for Mecklenburg County. Melissa, you give these women Changed Choices gives these women emotional, spiritual, and financial support in jail and prison and after release. What kind of financial support does somebody need in jail?
They receive some basic hygiene items, but there's, you know, lotion, receiving books, like spiritual books or self-help books, things that they just wouldn't normally be able to afford. So it's not much. It might be $10 a month, but for them, it's huge, especially the ones that have no family.
When you got out of prison the first time, I'm told that you were released, you were confined to your home.
Mm-hmm. Also, home confinement.
How do you make a living and pay for that home and the food that you have to eat, et cetera, when you can't leave the house?
Well, fortunately, I was at the Change Choice home.
Okay.
So that was a great start for me. I didn't have to worry about somewhere to go. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get into the transitional part of it. So that was not a problem that I had.
I know that your focus is on women in prison and in jail, but is there a way to identify and help young people who are at risk, who will most likely, if not intervened with, end up in jail or prison? Is there a way to find them and get to them before they really need your help?
Yeah, we actually, Sheriff Bailey mentioned the youthful offenders. We have 16 and 17-year-old girls who are in the county jail, and Change Choices actually runs a program called the COOL program, and we have interactions with every single one of the girls that comes through the jail, and we provide them one-on-one mentoring and classes.
Is it as effective? Because I guess some people need to hit bottom before they realize they really need help. Is mm-hmm. it as effective?
I think it is. We've had some incredible results, and we have we stay connected with some of those girls who come through the program. And, you know, some of them are doing really well. A lot of them just, another quote I love is, given sun, soil, air, and water, a plant does not need to be told how to grow.
Mm.
And so you provide, you
nurture.
Yeah, you provide nurture, and then it's amazing what you see happen.
Mm-hmm. I keep saying that the two of you, Monique and Melissa, are co-founders of this organization called Second Helping, which is under the Changed Choices umbrella. And I know that's a shorthand. I'm sure other people have their fingers in the pie as well. It's a catering thing after all. talk about the difference. What is Second Helping?
Okay, so again, with the employment barriers that Changed Choices clients were facing, we decided to do something a little bit different and to start a social enterprise,
mm-hmm.
to use the tenets of business to create social change. And so we decided to start a business called Second Helping. And Monique and I, when she got out of prison, we just sat around together and really started dreaming. And with support from the Change Choices Board, we were able to start one little coffee cart in one little office building, which Monique staffed. She went to culinary school at Community Culinary School of Charlotte, got some culinary education along with another woman. They ran that coffee cart together. And then Goodwill Industries put another coffee stand in their building on Freedom Drive. And then a couple months ago, we opened a takeout restaurant on Central Avenue. So our takeout shop employs six women, and Monique is now the catering manager. And so we are really trying to create opportunities for women who are coming out of jail and prison through this social enterprise.
You only pick the hardest business in the world to get involved in, the restaurant business.
Yes, and we see now. But we will not be defeated.
Long hours, huh?
Yes.
Do you enjoy it?
I enjoy it. It has become a passion. I enjoy it.
And since you're the manager, you're the boss now, at least over the catering division, is it difficult? Are you seeing things differently? Are you seeing other women differently? Are you having to help and nurture them because they're learning a new way?
I do, and I don't mind giving back to them because it was given to me. And I know how to give to them because it was given to me.
Talk to me. How do you give it to people?
Just give them love. I just give them what was given to me. I wrap myself around them.
You can see it in your eyes, by the way, when you talk about it.
Well, thank you.
You can see it in your eyes. We've talked a little bit about this, Sheriff, and one of the big stumbling blocks for people is getting a job once they get out of prison, and we don't really give them a lot of alternatives if we shut the doors in their faces. So is that the biggest reason a lot of people end up going back to jail? They just can't make it because we won't let them?
Well, people are going to survive on the streets, whatever it takes. And if they go back to their same environment, they're not getting any support, then they are going to come back. But if they go out and we have partnerships in the community, if people give them an opportunity, then they can self-sustain themselves. They don't have to go rob somebody or sell drugs to get the food. Then they can do it.
We've talked about this. Same thing, helping people who are in jail and helping people stay out of jail before they get there. We've talked about this many times, and I've talked to your predecessor, Jim Pendergraf, about this as well. And every time we talk about these things, it seems to me that you, the two of you, were enlightened, relatively enlightened. Is that the case, or are there other sheriffs, other people in your positions around the state, around the country, who look at this the same way?
I think around the country there probably are. I don't know of too many around the state, but a lot has to do with resources available to us. And in this county, there's a lot of people like Melissa and Monique and others who are just passionate about trying to get these people to turn their lives around. And when you have those kind of folks outside, it does make a difference. The success stories we see, and I alluded a while ago about our high school, and one thing we learned, we have a partnership with communities and schools because we could put them through the high school program. When they got out, if they went back to their same environment, they weren't doing well where they were doing good in our school. We had a 17-year-old that said, "Can I stay in jail until I graduate?" Well, we can't do that.
And you've told me that story before. Yeah. The reason he wanted to stay in jail was –
because if he went back to his environment, to his home community, he was going to fail, and he knew he was going to fail. But partnerships like that with communities and schools where they get them back into their mainstream of schools, partnerships with folks like Melissa where they're giving people opportunity for jobs, it makes all the difference in the world.
It's a lot cheaper.
A whole lot cheaper.
To do it that way.
Tremendously cheap.
Why then don't we do it that way? It's a lot.
We are doing it that way. And I think that this is a issue that really, whether you're a Republican, Democrat, conservative, or liberal, I think at this table we probably have, some different political opinions, but it's just really a common sense issue when you look at the fiscal sense of it and the human potential sense. I mean, that there are so many people like Monique who could be doing what she's doing, making a difference in the community, helping other women, really making a positive impact rather than languishing in a jail cell.
A lot of people don't know criminals. A lot of people don't know people who get themselves in enough trouble to get into the county jail for 3 months. What's the difference in those people who don't know that kind of life and those people that do? People don't get up in the morning to set out to do bad things, do they?
No, but prison can happen or jail can happen to anybody. It can happen to that person that just rolled by in that van. Mm-hmm. They could go out and hit someone, just because they were texting on the phone, and they end up in the jail. So it has no barrier. you know.
But, I mean, people who sell drugs, people who do things that are clearly illegal, and they do it with intent. I mean, if you hit somebody because you're texting, it wasn't intentional, but you're going to have to pay for it. But when you get up in the morning and you decide, okay, I'm going to go down to the corner and I'm going to sell cocaine, you know that's illegal. You know that if you get caught, you're going to go to jail. You know that you're impacting other people's lives, those people who are buying that, because it's not a victimless crime, I suppose. What's the mindset? Is it? Do you get up in the morning knowing I'm doing a bad thing? What I'm doing is wrong, but I'm still going to do it.
It's like I said earlier, it's like a moral breakdown. Your standards are lowered. And like I said, I may have known what I was doing was wrong, but morally to me, that's what I wanted to do. It was a breakdown that I had.
You wanted to do it because why? Because money?
Money. Once I got into it, I felt like I had to do it because of a situation that I was put in that, like the boyfriend, he had went to jail, so I had to continue to do what he did just to maintain that life I had and then to pay for attorneys for him. But just being in that lifestyle, I think it just made me think another way. Like I just had a mental moral breakdown. I didn't care about those people.
Where is he now?
He's still in prison. He has a life sentence.
Nancy emails, I first learned about Changed Choices through a counseling internship. It's an astounding organization that is run entirely on donations and grants, using few paid employees and many volunteers. Please ask them about their funding and volunteer needs. It would be great to see Charlotte rally around this group that is making a significant difference.
We love Nancy. Thank you, Nancy. No, we run on a true shoestring budget. We have some wonderful supportive founders, including the ABC Board and the Reimprise Fund, who have been incredibly generous with second helping. But a lot of our support comes from area congregations who give, you know, monthly checks or, you know, those $20 checks that come in the mail. We have about 300 volunteers that support us. And our goal with Second Helping is to be a truly self-sustaining business. We're not there yet. So we really need people to come and buy some fried chicken and some black bean cakes.
Order caterings.
Ordering catering from Monique. Yeah. It'll really, you know, a lot of people think, what do I do to make a difference? And the news is so bad. And we are changing lives every day. And a check really does make a difference.
I was actually surprised to learn that despite your success with Second Helping, you're still not making your expenses. That means you're losing money. And that obviously can't go on, and you've launched this crowdfunding campaign. What is that all about?
Yeah, we're just trying to get the word out via an Indiegogo campaign, which you can find on our Facebook page. If you go to Second Helping Charlotte on Facebook, you'll see it there. And you'll see Monique just telling our story about where we are and where we want to be. We're going to get there. Mm-hmm. And we trust that when people see what we're doing and hear about what we're doing, that they're going to rally around this organization.
What is it about food helping people who have gotten themselves into trouble, who are trying to rebuild their lives? Because we have your organization. We have Jim Noble's King's Kitchen over here on Trade Street. We have a couple of other organizations that help people learn the culinary business. What is it about food? Why is the food industry more welcoming than other industries to people who've gotten themselves in trouble and are trying to rebuild their lives?
I think in a lot of cases, the food industry is looking for people who have kind of got it, but have put themselves in situations that they're willing to work long hours.
So they got the engine, but the engine's off the track.
Right, and they understand now, and it's almost like I'm creating something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people have never had the opportunity. It's like in our horticulture, when they see something grow from a seed they planted, if they created this food that people like, then they're really understanding that they're giving back to the community or giving back to friends or whoever it is. They've created something. In the past, they haven't been creating things. Mostly they've been destroying things. And so I think food's an easy way to make that change.
How many people are involved with Changed Choices, helping people?
We have a volunteer base of over 300 people. So we've got women every single week who go down and visit 16- and 17-year-olds at the jail and a new program for 18- to 24-year-olds.
And they're all volunteers.
All volunteers. We've got women who come and, you know, do yard maintenance. We've got people moving women once they get out of our transitional home into a new home. We've got people moving them and helping them set up houses and just, you know, mentors and counselors and sponsors.
And only 7%, I think that was the figure.
I think that's a little – yeah, I think we're actually at 4% now.
That's even better. If only 4% end up going back to jail or prison. So obviously, do you stay in touch with them for years and years and years? Do they need your help for years and years and years? Do they become volunteers themselves?
Yes, some do. And you can see and, you know, hear from Monique, it's like once once they're stable, they want to give back. They want to help.
How many people work for Second Helping?
5.
And they're paid?
Plus you. 6.
I'm 5. Well, we have 6 now. We actually hired a new person, so yeah.
Okay, so those people are paid?
Yes, they are.
Because they're coming out of the program, and that's their job now. Does it pay well? Does it pay enough to live on?
When they first start off, it's just a little over minimum. Uh-huh. But there are room for, you know, advances. So.
And what's your average day? How long is your average day?
My day?
Yeah.
Monique day may start at 8 in the morning and go to 9 at night. Just depends.
Well,
7 days a week sometimes.
Thank God that you're not a baker, because it would start at 3 o'clock in the morning. We have a fellow, Nick, on Twitter who wants to know, have you seen the Netflix show Orange is the New Black, which is about women in prison, and he wants to know, if you've seen it, do you think it's an accurate representation?
Well, for me, it feels a little bit like my day job, so I haven't chosen that as my entertainment. but I've read the book, and I'm a huge fan of the author, Piper Kerman, who actually is now following us on Twitter, we learn, which is really cool. But I love the book because she's a Smith graduate who goes to jail and finds what I have found working in the jail. Like, people are people. People make mistakes, and, you know, we're all in this together as human beings. There's no us, there's no them, criminal, non-criminal. We're just people trying to help each other.
Is it more difficult, less difficult, or about the same for men and women who are trying to build their lives after being released?
I think because most women are caretakers of small children, it's tremendously difficult. There's a lot of pressure. You know, a lot of guys can just go out and do what they do and whatever, but women have people.
Melissa Mummert is the Client Initiatives Manager of Change Choices. They need your help. Monique Maddox is the Catering Manager for Second Helping Buy Their Food. And Chip Bailey is Sheriff of Mecklenburg County. Stay out of jail.
Try it.